Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I am joined right here on Radio Row by a chunk of the Patriots secondary. A cornerback for the Pats, a Super Bowl champion. He had 38 tackles, 6 passes defensed. He had a pick this season. 203rd pick in 09 out of Rutgers. The co-host of Double Coverage with the McCourty Twins podcast, Jason, is with us. His bro, a safety, a 3-time Super Bowl champ. 53 tackles, 7 passes defensed, 5 INTs. 27th pick overall out of Rutgers, co-host of the same podcast, and the fellas appear courtesy of Mountain Dew Zero Sugar. Damn, bros, I'm already exhausted. Yeah. What's up with you guys?
We got tips, too.
Good, all right. Good, man. Free as me. Free as me. Yeah. Jason, what's going on? How you feeling?
Feeling good. Can't complain.
All right, so let me ask you this. I was checking out the podcast. One of the things you talked about, in the offseason, it's not easy for NFL dads. Break that down for me. What happens to an NFL dad in the postseason?
He's going to get in trouble for some of the stuff he said on there.
No one listened to this show. You're good, man. Say whatever you want.
You're taking kids to school, gymnastics, dance. My wife doesn't wake up as early anymore, so I'm fixing breakfast. One kid doesn't want to wake up. This kid doesn't. Oh, I want cereal. You pour a bowl of cereal. I don't want cereal anymore. I want pancakes. So it's just chaotic every morning.
Yeah, and I want mom too. Exactly. Ultimately, they'll get there, right?
I'm like, well, go wake her up then.
Moms are ready. Right. You're ready to go on a break. Soon as, like, you lose that game. We lost to Tennessee a Saturday night. They stayed up with us late. You know, you're a little angry. Sunday came. So, all right, man, you got a lot of time on your hands now. So, big adjustment.
I love that. You guys have a 24-hour rule, right? You don't get too high. You don't get too low. Except with the family, it's like an 8-hour rule.
Yeah, exactly. Right,
man, that was terrible, man. I'm here for you. Get your ass back to work now.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do something.
Let's see what's going on. All right. So, 1 year ago, you guys were getting ready to play in the Super Bowl together. Jason, what do you remember about that week and the feeling as the game got closer and closer? What's this like for somebody who's never been through that?
It was my first time. And yep. I went out to 4 Super Bowls to watch him. And so for four different occasions, he explained to me what media night is like, what every day talking to the media for 45 minutes, so what the practices were like. So I just took it all in. I enjoyed every single moment of the 2-week process leading up to the game, and I had a blast with it.
You know, it's awesome that you would say that, and probably awesome you could share it with him, but totally different if you guys were preparing for the same game together.
Exactly.
So what was that like for you last year at this time?
It was great. I mean, I think we always talk football. So, like, even leading in the Super Bowl, he'd call me sometimes, like, what's your game plan? Like, what are you going to do? And, like, now you're going through it. We have his input. And I thought last year he brought a great perspective, a guy that was in the league 10 years, never been in the playoffs. I think he always kept a sense of urgency in the locker room, so alive, because last year we lost 5 games in the regular season. Guys are like, me, I'm like, this is the most games I've ever lost in a regular season. He's like, it's the most games I've ever won in a regular season. Oh, so it was just a great time last year experiencing all of that.
You know, you can't pick. It's not like going to college where you can pick or you're supposed to be able to pick. You can't pick your situation. Yeah. And once you get in, it's hard to change your situation. You're each other's biggest fans. There's no doubt about that. But it was such a different experience, the league. What was it like for you watching him end up in the situation he was in? He earned everything he had.
Yeah.
But still, it's human nature not to be like, man, I don't know. This is hard.
I learned a life lesson, like, when you're on your journey and you're trying to accomplish things as an individual, you can't compare yourself to whether it's your twin brother or another person. You kind of just got to stay in your own moment and do what you can do to improve your own situation. So I had to learn early on, that's my twin brother. We've shared so many moments. If I never get a chance to play in the playoffs, play in the Super Bowl, what's better than when I was in Arizona with him after the game and seeing the joy he had winning his first Super Bowl, how exciting that was, just to see what it was like. But I'm not going to lie, last year was awesome.
Devin, this is a good dude, man. You better keep this guy around.
Oh, I know,
really,
man.
Good dude, man.
But I pay him to say some of this stuff. I pay him to say these things.
That is really good. Jason, like, there's this legend that on draft night in 2010 when the Pats drafted your brother, the call came in as it's supposed to. Did you take that call? And where was he?
I think he was getting a little nervous. He had to go to the bathroom. So I think he wanted to get away from everybody. Phone rings. I'm like, well, I can't let it go to voicemail. So I pick up. I'm talking to Mr. Kraft.
They might change their mind, man.
And yeah,
exactly,
right?
Oh, he's not available. You know, the Patriots is all about dependability. So he goes, I'm going to put Coach Belichick on the phone. That's when I ran to the bathroom. At that point, I'm scared of Coach Belichick. And I'm like, here, Dev, you just got drafted.
What about that? What did you think when you When you found out who was on the other end of the line, what was that moment like?
It was funny because Bill had actually spoke to us when we were in college. He was visiting, and him and Coach Shiano are good friends. And he had him in, and he spoke to us. And it was right after the Patriots had got killed by the Dolphins when they first really started doing Wildcat. And I remember when he talked to us, and he was like, there's no magic potion. And then when he called, I was like, man, I'm going to somewhere where it's going to be hard.
Because there's no magic potion.
Yeah, I'm like, this is going to be tough. And then getting there and seeing how he was the exact same in my first team meeting as the meeting he had when he spoke to our team. And that's what I soon learned. The dude is just consistent. Like, everything is the same with him. It's been a joy to play and learn from him.
The McCourty twins joining me for another couple of minutes. You know, the Rutgers thing is so interesting because they had you guys both back to have the commencement address. Now, your experiences were a little bit different, right? Like, Devin, if one of the things you mentioned in your speech was in high school, Jay was the more heavily recruited player, that you both went on a visit to Rutgers, but at the time, Jason was the only one they offered, and you said at graduation, quote, deep inside, I was like, man, F Rutgers. What was your visit like to the school?
It was one of those visits where, like, once you get the offer, you get an official visit. And they were like, hey, man, You want to come too? And I was like, oh yeah, sure. And you know, not knowing if I was ever going to even get an offer. So Rutgers made the mistake though. Once they offered me, he didn't commit. The next day, I said, I called Coach Shannon. I said, oh, I'm coming. Yeah, I'll be there. So in case he doesn't come, you still gonna have to deal with the brother you didn't want.
I
so
love it.
It's worked out in the end though.
That is so good. All right, you fellas are working with Mountain Dew Zero Sugar. Jason, tell me exactly how did that come to be, and what should people know about this?
They have a new Super Bowl ad coming out commercial Sunday, but the ads already dropped yesterday. And it's a play off the movie The Shining, which has twins in the movie. That's where we come into play. And Dev's been talking trash on me all day.
So Mountain Dew, when you hear zero sugar, people are like, ah, I don't know about the taste. But it is. I'm the classic, like the twins. I'm the classic one. I'm the real Mountain Dew. But he was the new cool thing last year. He came out. And what did you see at the end of last year? Both won a Super Bowl. And that's kind of like what you're getting from Mountain Dew. Come out new products, same great taste, delivering everything Mountain Dew usually does. So it's been cool to see the similarities for us working with them today.
Dude, I see what you did there.
You like that, right?
I did like that, yeah. Man. I see exactly what you did there.
One Super Bowl appearance, five. Three wins, one
see,
win.
I mean,
you know,
is this like all day, every day? Like every
all
damn day? Is this go on?
All day,
every day?
Just a friendly reminder from the older brother.
Amazing. Like you can ever forget, right? All right, fellas, I don't want to get you in trouble. Thanks for starting me off on this Friday. That's a great way to start the show. I appreciate you both, and good to see you.
Thanks for having us.
Deontay Wilder. Champ, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Good, dude. I'm doing great. We're 3 weeks and a day from the fight. How are you feeling right now? How's your life?
Oh, man, my life has been hard, man. It's been, it's been hard, but it's been great. You know, the preparation for the fight has been amazing. You know, camp has we've been on fire in camp. I got a lot of guys coming all over the world to give me some looks for Fury. You know, Fury is a unique type of person. So you know, you got to pick and choose certain guys that could emulate his style, but. Other than that, man, I'm here with you guys. I'm happy. I'm in great spirit. You know, I bring a lot of positive energy, and I'm ready to go.
You do, man. That's why I kind of chuckled when you said it's been a hard life. I chuckled because I know it has. I certainly know it has, but you're so happy, man. You're always happy. You're always positive. You've been the heavyweight champion in the world now for more than 5 years, and you can say what you want about MMA or boxing, but the heavyweight champion of the world is, in theory, in practicality, the baddest man on the planet.
Yes, sir.
What's it been like for the last 5 years being the baddest man on the planet?
It's been great. You know, getting the love from the people has been amazing as well. You know, as boxing has caught on fire. You know, I remember 10 years ago, you know, it was tough, you know, to be a heavyweight in America because, you know, boxing is not our top sport. We have so much competition here. But it was such a no one knew who was the heavyweight champion of the world,
right.
Basically what I'm trying
That's
to say.
That's hard to believe, right?
It's crazy. And I knew I had a task ahead of me to try to bring the excitement, try to bring the knowledge, you know, back to America, you know. And I think it's a job well done. And I'm still seeking for greatness. I tell everyone, we all have greatness in us, but greatness is only determined by service. And I just want to apply as much service as possible while I can.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Then don't make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Wild Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and it's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every bite. I mean, who wants dried, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy for those of you who like to take things up a notch. So, the next time you want a great protein, an energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
Deontay Wilder joining us. For those who do not know the story, so did you find boxing or did boxing find you?
I found boxing. You know, I found boxing. I went looking for it. It was a moment in time where I was in college. I had a daughter that was on the way, and it turned my life upside down for the greater good, though. You know, if it wasn't for her, my daughter was born with spina bifida. If it wasn't for her, I would never be boxing. I would never had to go and venture out outside of my beings of like being. You know, I wanted to become a professional football or basketball player, and you know, being that I had skills of protecting myself. You know. Me and my friend thought it was a great idea to go into boxing. I had a friend in college. We used to always talk about what we want to do in and outside of life. And what are the things we was trying to do to get there? Because you can easily say, oh, I want to do this and want to do that. But you must apply action.
We all want to do things.
You know, you got to apply action at some point in time. And I told him that I want to start boxing because I was ignorant to the sport. I felt like every fighter stepped in the ring or was on magazines or whatever made a lot of money. But I didn't know it was levels. Like, it's levels to everything. And, you know, that's when I, you know, he had a guy that was in his class and wanted to recruit fighters. My friend was a lover. I'm a lover and a fighter. So right. I can do it both. And he was like, man, got this guy at the gym, want you to come, whatever. So I'm like, word. We was just talking about this. So how ironic this happened. And then I met him, went to the gym. I'm like, I'm from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You know, it's basically mostly about football. And when I walked up into this gym, I never seen a boxing gym in my life, and walked up into this like I was at the right place at the right time. I really heard those heavenly bells say, hallelujah, hallelujah.
Seriously, was that what it was like?
I swear.
Like, what was it like the first time you walked in that gym?
It was just to see so many different things going on at one time. One guy hitting the heavy bag, another guy hitting the speed bag, the boxing conversation, the sparring, you know, the smell of wet gym, you know. It was heaven to me. It was like, this is my moment in time where I can really, you know, do something that I want to do. My goal is a professional athlete, you know, so I never thought in a million years boxing, but, you know.
So all those things, though, what happened the first time you got punched in the face? And that kept happening over and over again. Then what?
Well, you know, the object of boxing is to hit and not be hit. So you try to abide by those rules of things. You know, no one wants to get hit. And it's not fun getting hit in the head. You know, even the doctor will tell you the head is not meant to be hit in the first place. But, you know, we the ones that we love this. It's just that feeling of being a gladiator, a warrior, yeah. Having that mentality inside of your heart is the passion for it. Just like anyone else occupation. It's like if you have that passion and that flame and you just enjoy what you do, they say it's not working.
Right.
So, you know, it's just the same thing in boxing.
Deontay Wilder is my guest. He is the heavyweight champion of the world. You know, I had Jorge Masvidal on this program. I don't know how closely you follow the UFC and MMA. He's really big on winning is not enough. You cannot win. I need to baptize my opponent. And he was serious. You know, he wasn't trying to be disrespectful, but he said there needs to be a baptism.
Yes,
that's
sir.
What the fans want. That's what they're paying for. It's my job to give them that. I mean, is it important to you to win regardless of how you win, or do you have to win a certain way?
I feel you have to win a certain way. You know, I think you get more credibility of the style that you win in. You know, although a win is a win, you know, you can have an ugly win, you can have a pretty win, and we always want to leave with those pretty wins, but I want to leave with a bad 10, you know what I'm saying? So with that being said, she has to be amazing, you know, when I leave out that ring. And That's what, at the end of the day, that's what people want. Just like you said, that's what people come and get dressed and pay their hard-earned money for. They want to see entertainment. So entertain me, please. And when you come and see a Deontay Wilder event, just like the one that that you will see February the 22nd, you know, at the MGM Grand, or you can watch it on Fox or ESPN pay-per-view,
good.
You will see the entertainment of what I do. I've been doing it for 12 years. I'm consistent with what I do. I'm, like I said, I'm providing my service to my greatness, and I have dramatic power, so I'm always leaving my fights with dramatic knockouts. And I think it's like it became, I've mesmerized people with just knockouts. So people expect to see knockouts of me, and I expect to give it to them. That's the only way I feel like I've done my just due.
You generally close every single show. How much pressure does that put on the opponent knowing that one shot could end everything quickly? Like, they have to be nearly perfect for all 12 rounds, because if you catch them that one good shot, they're probably not going to wake up.
That's right. I always tell them, you got to be perfect for 12 rounds. 36 minutes, I only have to be perfect for 2 seconds. And that's the truth, you know, that's factual. And it just, for me to have so much tremendous power, it's amazing to have it, you know. To know I can go in there and one shot is all it takes. But for my opponent to think that way, I mean, to be the opposite of my opponent, to know that, man, if this guy hit me, like I can go, it must be a terrifying feeling. It has to be. To go in there, just like I always, like, I tell people, like my mind, how big it is. It's so open. It's so big that a spaceship could fit in it. So, like, when people explain things to me, like, I'm a great person to talk to because I understand more than what the norm would, because I use my mind as a virtual reality. So when you were explaining, I'm pressing play in my head so I can actually see it performing, so I can give a great assessment of what you do. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
And so when Fury was describing the punch, concussion, and he said it didn't hurt. It just, my lights went out. And just imagine closing your eyes.
You and I have talked about this. How in the world did that man get up? How did he get up?
I mean, he had a lot of...
What got him up?
I mean, a lot of prayers was in the arena that night, you know. He definitely had God on his side, you know, and he a true believer. So I can go even deeper in certain situations, but I think I'll lose some people, so I stay right here in this lane. You know, it was to see him get up, man. It was exciting just to relive it in my head, and then to be able to go into the Wilder 2 fight. You know, it's
so.
I'm just happy to be where I am now at this point in time.
So before you go, then what about the second one? How is this second one different than the first one? Does it feel different to you? And how is it different?
Yes, the second one is definitely different. The second one is definitely going to be different than the first. The first one, you know, believe it or not, in camp I broke my arm.
Yeah.
You know, I broke my arm in camp, and
You got the scar to prove it.
Yes, sir. I kept it on the hush hush. The proper protocol for situations like this is to cancel the fight until you heal up and then reschedule the date.
Why didn't you?
Well, you know, I'm one of those hardhead kind of guys. It's like I'm a true gladiator. I'm a warrior. I've fought with broken arms. I've fought with broken hands, torn biceps, you know, third degree burns. You know, I'm a warrior. It's like when I get in that ring, like, it's nothing is going to stop me from accomplishing my task, completing the mission and getting the job done. I'm just one of those type of people. You know, it's hard for me to just give up when I'm already in course of a completion. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Yes.
And with that being said, I had 4 weeks and 4 days to heal my arm. But in 4 weeks and 4 days, I would be in that ring, the actual fight. So it either you heal fast or you, that's the only time that you have. Thank God I'm a fast healer. I think I'm an X-Man because of my, for real, I heal so quickly.
I'm not arguing with you, man. So, you might be.
Yeah, so my right hand was off a little bit in that fight. Then I was so over there excited, every time I threw, it was like an L shape instead of straight, because I really couldn't throw it too straight because of my arm.
Right.
And I didn't throw it at all in training because I wanted to reserve.
You're saving it.
Yeah, I was saving it because I said, at least I'm going to get paid in the fight.
Right.
If it's break, I'm going to get paid.
There
so,
you
know. But so with that being said, I said all that to say that I'm going to be way more, much more healthy. I have two hands now. I'm going to be way much more calmer. And when I hit him with that left hook, my body was squared up. And the madness to my punch, what allows me to knock guys out, is because of my the formation, the technique that I throw it, not just because of the tremendous power, it's how I throw my body into the punches.
Right.
And when I hit him with the left hook, I was too squared up. I was like this way instead of being half body, turning this way, torso.
He didn't turn it over.
So
didn't turn over on that punch.
Yeah, man.
You will now. All right. So February 22nd, live on Fox Sports and ESPN Plus pay-per-view. Tickets for the event can be purchased at mgmgrand.com. He is the WBC heavyweight champion of the world, the leader of the Bomb Squad, Deontay Wilder. Deontay, great to see you, man. Thanks so much.
Always good to see you.
Really
Blessings.
Good to see you, man. Scott Pioli is my guest. Scott, why don't we do it right now? It's good to see you. How are you?
It's awesome. This is crazy, right? Just random, but 27 years. That makes us both sound old because we started doing this around the same time.
So why don't we just both lie about it then? You and I have done this for 5 years. So what's it like when you were so locked in for so long on the inside?
Yeah.
Now for a little while you come on the outside, you walk around, you see this side of it. Like, what kind of impressions do you have?
It's bizarre world. You know. So I've been down
Welcome
here before.
My life.
Yeah. This is the circus, right? There's a big tent outside.
That's it.
You know, it's having been to the Super Bowl 5 times, you get to see a glimpse of this. But you don't spend a whole lot of time down in it. And then as an executive, when you're not in the game, they bring you down here to shake hands, kiss babies, do some appearances. But it's always so quick, and you're led different places. This is enormous. And now they let fans in. This is...
Well, they've been doing that for a while.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, yeah. That's not a new development, Scott. No. You do need to get out a little bit more, man.
Oh, my family tells me that. But this is quite the event.
You know, I had the McCourty twins on to start the program. These guys are great. They were great. And although they weren't exactly going to dial me into the Patriot way, Devin made it pretty clear that when he got on the phone with Bill for the first time, he knew things were going to be different.
Yeah.
That they were
going
to be done a certain way. What's that indoctrination period like? I mean, I know I'm not expecting you to open up this whole thing and let us all in, but when you get indoctrinated to the Patriot way, what's that like initially?
Yeah, actually, it's so far less complicated than people want to believe. And Bill's main principles are the same principles he had when he was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. I was with him in Cleveland as well. And it's really, at times, so simple, Jim. He had 3 rules. Be on time, pay attention, work hard. And if you really drill down on those 3 things, it's very simple, except unless you're an entitled athlete who's been entitled your whole life and you have people making excuses for you and enabling you, it's difficult then
and
to be on time.
Pushing you through the system, right?
Correct.
Because some guys are like that.
They're
never
absolutely
accountable because they are different. They're special. They can do things the other guy can't do, so you just keep pushing them right through the system.
And you know what, Jim? Yes, it's the athletes, but it's everyone in this industry,
you
right?
Bet.
It's
all of us.
I can call it our industry now.
Yeah, okay.
I'm doing it. But it's everywhere. And it's about accountability. It's about responsibility. It's about being accountable not just for yourself and the person directly with you that you're working with. It's to a greater good. And in the Patriot way, the greater good is about winning championships and nothing else. Everything else is a distraction. Now, if you have success, then you make a determination whether you want to stay in a system that's going to be successful or you want to monetize that differently. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's just it's not as difficult as people want to make it sound.
Nor does it seem as original as people want to make it sound. It seems pretty common sense to me. And then Devin did say one thing. He said consistency. The man is
Absolutely.
So consistent. I mean, isn't this everybody's way? The 3 rules that you point out and then you add consistency. I thought that was everybody's way.
You want it to be, right? But even all of us are inconsistent at times.
Yep.
I mean, I'm put my hand up. You know, and Bill is extremely consistent, and he doesn't compromise a whole lot. And again, when he talks about discipline, it's so funny. He doesn't care about hair length or earrings or tattoos or just be disciplined in the sense that you don't do anything that affects
the
greater
team.
Good.
Right.
Yeah, the team, the greater good. Absolutely.
Scott Pioli is joining us. What about the matchup itself? As you look at it, God, it's such a great matchup, right?
How awesome is
Give
this?
Me some thoughts. Who do you like? What are you looking to see on Sunday, let me put it to you that way?
You know, I'm an old school guy. I see these two incredible offenses. I want to see some good defense.
Okay.
I really want to see how the defenses are going to attack. How are they going to find a way to slow down the 49ers? How are they going to find a way to slow down Mahomes? And can they do it for 60 minutes? Because that's the thing about Mahomes. They may have a game plan. They may have things figured out for a while, But as I've seen Mahomes, he's the most mature 23-year-old. I think about number 12 when how mature he was early in his career, and I'm not comparing the two. But his, when you see him on the sidelines, how calm, cool, and collected he is, when they're not winning, he is totally unaffected in a good way. In a good way. And it'll be interesting
to see.
We've
seen it, right? They've come back so many times.
Oh, yeah.
So from your perspective, what is that? Is he wired like that? Did he learn that? How is that guy that far along at that age in terms of maturity?
When I see, being a scout, a personnel, when I see people like that, I see it's not any one thing. I think you're part born that way. It's right. The whole argument, as always, nature versus nurture. Right?
Exactly. That's my favorite argument ever.
Absolutely. And really, it's both. It's there is part that is nature, and part of it has to be nurtured, because if you're not in the right system, and that system for Patrick started with his family, right? It's not just what's happened in Kansas City. It's what happened in college. It's what happened when he was raised. So he's been exposed to a lot of things, and none of this is too big for him. I mean, he spent his entire life around professional baseball teams. Yes, the Mets are a professional baseball team.
According to whom? Let's not get crazy here. 27 years in the NFL does not give you the right to just come on the show and start saying stuff, Scott. No, I get that. Listen, I want to get you to go in a different direction. Yeah. There's something really interesting about this game, and that's Katie Sowers. She's an offensive assistant with San Francisco. Yeah. She's making history this weekend. You have history with her. You go back a long way with her.
Yeah.
When did you first meet her?
So Katie Sowers, our daughters, my wife and I, our daughter Mia, met Katie when she was our daughter's fifth grade basketball coach in Kansas City.
Okay.
Yeah, she was coaching. She was the athletic director for the city of Kansas City, and also trying to make some extra money was coaching girls basketball. She was coaching our daughter. When I met her, she had all these football questions. And it was 2013, so it was the year after I had left the Chiefs. And she had all these questions, and then I started saying, well, hey, by the way, I do know a little bit about football. And she's like, hey, I know exactly who you are. She gave me one of those. So we cultivated this relationship, and to make it a very long story and long path short, we stayed in touch. She calls me a mentor and a second father, and it's so funny. I just ran into her. She has a twin sister, Liz, and they look completely except – I'm going to say, if Katie hears this, I apologize. Liz is rocked. I mean, Liz was a receiver. Katie was only a quarterback. And it's so funny because everyone was going, Coach Sowers. And it was Liz.
To the wrong coach.
But, so Katie and I stayed in touch. And when I got to the Falcons, I introduced her to our coaches because I ran our coaches fellowship program, the Bill Walsh fellowship program. I introduced her to Dan Quinn and said, I really think we should include a woman this year in our coaching program. He was all for it, and when that four-week internship was done, I kind of stacked the deck and hired her as a seasonal intern. Usually in the player personnel department, we have these three people that we go through the summer camp, and then we pick one of them to be the seasonal intern for 10 months. Katie, even though she was working in coaching, I hired her to bring over, and it gave her proximity, right? And in doing a quality work, Jim, what people need is they need an opportunity, advocates, mentorship, and proximity to learn and to be educated. And Katie got immersed in that culture, and she showed herself to be beyond capable. And this is her second Super Bowl. People don't realize she was with us in the 16th season. That was, and of course, she took full credit with it behind. Pioli, the reason we're doing this is because she's great. She really is.
I mean, Scott, let me ask you this then. I mean, you've been credited as the backbone behind a number of initiatives to create coaching and scouting opportunities for women. There are so many things that you could spend your time and your energy on. Why is this particular cause so important to you?
The cause of equality, because, Jim, I just truly feel when you grow up like us, looking like us, right, white men, we have so much privilege and power that is given to us that we didn't earn, and we start on third base. And it's a much longer story, but I have two older sisters who were much better than me in every way imaginable, as students, as athletes. They were better behaved. They were in the principal's office far less. I spent a few days there. But they didn't have the same opportunities. You know, they graduated in the 70s. They didn't have the same opportunities. And truthfully, they didn't have the same opportunity to dream like I did. And there's just, to me, as you get older and you are blessed to have success, I was blessed to be a part of some really cool Super Bowl runs. There's so many people that never get that opportunity. And there's just something fundamentally wrong with that. And that's just talking about gender. I mean, there's race. There's so many people. Anyway, too much for this show probably in this time slot. But
I believe
in the work.
That.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that more than you realize, Jim.
Scott Pioli joining us. All right, so on Sunday, who do you have? Who do you have?
You know, I have this thing being a former football guy. You know, we were saying that you don't make picks. I will just say this. I'm not going to pick a team, but I cannot imagine the Kansas City Chiefs losing. Is that making a pick?
Sort of, kind of, not really. I mean, I see you working. I see what you're doing there. Like, part of me, I'll be honest. I look at Pat Mahomes, and I don't see how you beat this guy. I don't see how the guy can lose. But then I look at San Francisco and the pressure they get with that front four. You can't block this. You can't block them all. Somebody's getting home.
Exactly. My only concern for the San Francisco 49ers, the reason why I would pick the Chiefs, is how long this game is going to be. And there's something, even if it's in the 70s down here, there's something about the air down here that sucks the life out of you physically. And I'm wondering, you know, the third quarter, it was interesting watching the 49ers last week, the third quarter, Nick Bosa looked exhausted, and a number of players looked exhausted. They somehow found the will, and the offense did a better job to help the defense. I'm concerned about the 49ers defense in the end of the third and the fourth quarter of this game. That's why I'm giving a little bit of an edge to the Chiefs.
What about Kansas City? They did such a good job against Derrick Henry. All the credit in the world to that.
Yeah.
However, that's not a Kyle Shanahan coach team, nor did they have to deal. And I love Derrick Henry. I saw him yesterday on the show. But they're not dealing with the three-headed monster that San Francisco has. Kansas City has improved defensively and certainly in stopping the run, but can they stop that rushing attack?
The rushing attack and the play-action attack and then the passing game. I spent 2 years with Kyle, one of the best football coaches that I've been around, and I've said this before, Jim, he is as close, and this is an unfair comparison for Kyle, he is as close to Bill Belichick as anyone I've ever been with in terms of detail, in terms of making sure everything is the same and looks the same. His attention to detail is in a good way maniacal. So when you watch him call plays and design plays, it takes a split second for the defense to actually figure out what's happening. Sometimes it's passive. So I don't know if I don't know if Kansas City's defense is ready for what Kyle has been able to plan for 2 weeks.
Scott, before you go, like Kyle Shanahan, when it's all said and done, and this is a big if, could you see him having a better career than even his father had?
No disrespect to Mike Shanahan. Yes, I do.
I do, too.
I absolutely.
And this guy's brilliant, right?
He's brilliant. He's driven. But I'll tell you, the other thing is his father. His father has, because I got to know Mike Shanahan, has this this degree of humility, and that Michael has, and Mike's wife has, Kyle's mom and dad, and Kyle has that and even more. He has an ability and a type of humility that forces him to look at himself in the mirror. He is extremely driven, and he's just such a good dude. That's why I hate picking KC against him, because I hope for Kyle all the best. Yes, then, he's going to have a great – we're going to be talking about Kyle for years.
And then literally everybody who's in the business, seemingly – you got 10 seconds. Everybody wants Andy Reid to win, and I get that, too.
Yeah, yeah. And I want Andy to win, too, because I don't want his career to end without him getting a ring.
Right, and I think you should be in the Hall of Fame regardless. Scott Pioli, my guest. Scott, I'll tell you what, man. Talk about stepping up on short notice.
This was so fun, man. This
was
great.
The best. I'm
appreciate
so glad
you,
we did that. You were the
appreciate
best.
You.
Hey, sports fans, listen up. I've got a daily sports podcast that I want to tell you about, one that you want to check out from Wondery and The Athletic. It's called The Lead. Every weekday morning, The Lead brings you a deep dive into the biggest sports stories of the day from The Athletic's all-star team of local and national sports reporters. Stories like, where did the Niners' new star running back Raheem Mostert come from? Or what can Zion do for the Pelicans? So if you're looking for the full story behind last night's scores and today's hot takes, make sure you subscribe to The Lead from Wondery and The Athletic. Check it out.
Taysom Hill. Taysom, what's going on,
you're
man?
You're laying on there thick, man. But I appreciate it. This is it's been a pleasure.
Oh, dude, it's so good to see you. Like, I'll be honest, I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. It's been a few years since you came on the program. How are things? How you doing? How you living?
It's been great, man. Last 3 years have been a dream, and, you know, I never envisioned that my NFL career would be where it's at or has been what it's been, but my wife and I have loved every second of it.
Taysom Hill is joining me on the row. You know, you play with this energy, this intensity, this passion. It feels different to me. Like, I'd give you some lame cliche about, you know, if you could bottle that, man, you'd be a rich guy, which you're going to be a rich guy pretty soon anyway. But the energy itself, where does it come from? Have you always had that?
You know, I've always been super competitive. You know, I think that's kind of the byproduct of being the youngest of four in a big family, and I've always been trying to keep up with my older siblings. And I think when I got to New Orleans, I wasn't an every down guy, and so I kind of felt this pressure to, man, when you step on the field, you better be ready to go. And I think that's where kind of everything stemmed.
See, if your thing is, though, I'm going to get limited opportunities, I got to make something happen every single time, you know, if you force it, it's not going to happen generally.
Yeah,
so where's
right.
where's the fine line between trying to do too much and making something happen every time you get on the field?
Yeah, look, I'm still trying to figure that out. You know, frankly, I remember when this all started and 17 and then 18, it kind of ramped up. And I knew as it started, if it didn't go well, then my opportunities were going to go down, not up. And so, you know, trying to find that balance was difficult early. And then as things started to happen and go well, I felt comfortable, like, hey, this is going to be a good thing in our offense. And I'm going to get opportunities where that became a lot easier for me.
He is a football player for the New Orleans Saints. I want to lay it out like this. I mean, you're not just some guy who's got all this energy and this passion. You've got like an amazing skill set. To the point that Drew Brees said, quote, he's a unicorn. I have never seen anybody like him that can do all the things that he can do, end quote. Jared Cook said, quote, he's a quarterback that can do it all, no matter where you line him up. Never have seen it. I can't even think of anybody that comes close. I've never seen it. I mean, dude, we're talking about, like, Drew Brees, a guy who's done things that nobody has ever done before, and he's saying that he looks at you and he sees things that he's never even seen before. How does that make you feel when you hear that from that guy especially?
Yeah, well, look, it is humbling. You know, Drew is obviously a guy that I look up to and I admire so much. You know, I really look up to Drew as I view him as like a big brother. You know, he's become a best friend to me, and I couldn't have envisioned a better start to my career than working with him. And it's interesting. I didn't realize what I didn't know before I started working with Drew.
Right.
And I realized what it took to be successful in this league. I realized what it took to be a really good quarterback in this league. And, man, I was not prepared, you know, without that experience.
Did you think you were working pretty hard until you met him?
Yeah, but I did. And then I got to the Saints, and Drew was like, I start my day typically at 6, 6:30. I go in the facility. I stayed late. And I'm like, Drew, what are you doing? Like, this is your 17th season. Like, there's not a defense that you haven't seen, that you haven't prepared for. Like,
So what is he doing?
Watching film. Like, the guy prepares like no one I've ever been around in my entire life. You know, he will have game plans. Everything is memorized when I'm quizzing him. And, you know, you give him the first word of a play, and he'll know what the rest of the play is. And, you know, it's I'll be watching the game, and he'll make a check or he'll do something protection. I'm like, why is he doing that? And next thing you know, like, the pressure's coming that way. And it's really been a humbling experience working with him.
Taysom Hill joining me on Radio Row. You know, you and I used to talk back in the day when you were at BYU. We would talk about football, but we also talked about some of the work that you were doing as an intern at a venture capital firm.
Yeah, good memory.
And your presentation on blockchain technology. You suffered four season-ending injuries there, yet you came back each time. You came back and you kept on playing. How were you able to keep coming back the way you did? I mean, you seemed like you were indestructible.
Well, I think, you know, the more difficult thing for me was the mental aspect of overcoming an injury, where, you know, you were voted as a team captain, you were playing, you were touching the ball every snap, and then that just goes to zero. That was a really difficult thing for me. And so I felt like I had to channel my competitiveness. I had to challenge, you know, my eagerness of, like, getting better and feeling good about yourself because you're doing things that's going to better your life into other avenues, whether that was academics. So I challenged myself academically, whether it was going to work at a venture fund where I felt like super inadequate around all these really smart people and putting things together. That was mentally and emotionally, like, invigorating to me and got me through it all.
Right. I would imagine pretty scary, pretty challenging.
Yeah, no
doubt. Probably felt a little inadequate in the early moments. I mean, I mentioned the blockchain technology because it would stand a reason you would have a lot of other opportunities waiting for you outside of football. You could have moved on at any point. Why did you not give up on the game or yourself?
Yeah, well, there's such a short window of playing this game. And I think one of the other things that taught me when I was injured was how much I enjoyed playing it. And when you don't have it, you realize how much you miss it, how much you love it. And I think as you talk about energy and getting on the field and how much that means to you as a player, I think that's kind of where it all stems from. Like, I've been without the game for so many years when I should have been with the game. And that was really a life lesson.
Taysom Hill joining me for another moment or so. I guess that brings me back to Drew Brees. You can see whereby, I mean, I don't know if he's one of those you're going to have to rip the jersey off my back guys, but he's not leaving until he empties the tank completely. Watching him from afar, it looks like he's still got plenty left in that tank. What do you think is going through his head right now? Do you think he's thinking retirement? Do you think he still wants to play?
You know,
do you go there with him?
You know, we've had a number of conversations. You know, I think he's always going to want to play. You know, like internally, he's always going to want to play. But as you look at a season, the time and attention it takes from your family, from you personally, emotionally, the energy that you put into it, it's taxing, you know, and I think that's what he's going through. And that was my comment to him was the question for you is not if you can play, because I think Drew can play for a really long time. And as you look at his 2019 season,
an amazing year,
highest QBR of his entire career, you know, and you look at how efficient of a player he is. And what a lot of people don't realize is what the coaches ask him to do week in and week out. If you knew the intricacies of our game plan and what they ask Drew to do, it's crazy. And as a backup quarterback, as you're in the QB meeting, as you're looking at all this stuff, you're like, oh my gosh, like, Drew, you got to stop doing this because now they're putting all this on us.
Yeah, right. they're going to expect me to do the same thing.
That's right. And so I think that's what a lot of people don't really appreciate, you know, that goes on behind the scenes with him too. But, man, I really is, you know, his biggest fan. I hope he comes back. I would love to play with him again. And it's really been a highlight of my career playing and learning from him.
Taysom Hill, my guest. You're working with Tonal. Lay this out for me. What is it all about? What are you doing with these folks?
Yeah, Tonal's a young company I'm super excited about. It's an at-home gym. So if you've seen, you know, Mirror, where you have like cardio workouts with a personal trainer, it's Mirror plus a weight system. So you have your personal trainer, you have artificial intelligence to tell you how to do this workout, but you also have all your weight system inside this gym that mounts right on your wall. It's a new technology, and it's really, really cool.
That is pretty cool. Where are you in terms of nutrition? What are you fueling up with? You know, you are what you eat, body is temple, you know, all that stuff. Like, are you a plant-based guy, or how do you approach it?
I'm not. I will say I'm a percentage-based guy, and I don't know if that makes any sense.
Explain
other
that.
Than, you know,
like
my
80-20, that kind of thing?
My morning meal will be made up of, like, a certain percentage of carbs versus fruit and protein. And so, you know, I'm not as strict as I am during the season as I am right now. But, you know, as I get to the season, I try to load up heavy on carbs and then start to dwindle carbs throughout the day for me, and that's what I found is best for me.
All right. What about sleep? How important is sleep to your recovery as a professional athlete?
It's incredibly important. I will say, you know, as I get to the season, I need 7.5 hours. I get 7.5 hours, I'm good. You know, I'm in bed by 9:30, 10, and I'm up early and ready to go.
Dana White joins us. He is a friend of the program. He is the UFC president. UFC 247, Jones v. Reyes, February 8th from Houston, live on ESPN Plus. Dana, what's going on, man? How are you?
What's up, my man?
Dude, so good to see you. What's up? How are you?
I'm good. I'm having a blast here, man. I love Radio Row. This is fun.
Why?
You bump into a bunch of cool people. The fans are all here. And I wish the Patriots were in it. That dude over there with the Patriots jersey, huh? but, you know, it's fun, man. I love the energy here, and it never sucks coming to Miami.
No, not at all. I'll tell you who was great, too. Jorge Masvidal. I waited 30 seconds before I brought him up. Man, he was so awesome. I've been talking to this guy nonstop, right? So he came on the show. That wasn't enough. I had to put him on the podcast because he needed more runway, right? He did that. That wasn't enough. I wanted to see him in person. He came up here. Man, watching him work this room, you'd be so proud. He is great with everybody.
People
you know
love
this.
That kid. People love him, man. He's authentic.
What do they love about him?
He's authentic. He's real. He's hardcore. And the stuff that went down with Usman, the stuff that went down with Edwards, I mean, that's the kind of guy he is. That's how him and Diaz ended up fighting for the BMF belt. I mean, he's legit, he's real, and people feel it, and people like it.
Okay, you know what's so great about him too, Danny, is he's legit, and he's real, and he's raw. But, man, he's kind of like Amanda Nunes in the sense that they're both, like, really, they're charming, man. They're really charming. They're embraceable. But make no mistake, they will turn your lights out. I mean, they will,
exactly.
They will baptize you.
Absolutely right. And, yeah, like I said, people feel it. People know what's real and people know what's not. And they love
them. Dana White,
and
my guest. Yeah.
Down here in Miami, we haven't had a fighter for Miami to embrace yet. You know? Now they got – I literally, since I got here, went to dinner last night, been walking around, everybody's yelling at me, when's Masvidal fighting in Miami? When's Masvidal fighting in Miami?
What do you tell them?
Not soon. We're going to bring him to Vegas. So him and Usman will fight in Vegas, probably International Fight Week. And then if he wins, maybe we'll do his first title defense down here in Miami.
But is that have you decided that? Is that how that's going to go? You're going to have those two guys fight there?
Yeah, well, that was always the plan. And then you know, whatever happened with them a couple days ago or yesterday or whenever that was, yeah. We hadn't announced it yet, but now this has forced me to announce it.
Dana White is joining us. All right, so you get into 247. Let me ask you really quickly about John Jones and how he looks as a fighter. What's your sense, and I'll get to that part, but what's your sense as where this guy is right now as a person these days and where his head's at?
The problem with this John Jones-Dominic Reyes fight is that the casual fans, everybody knows John Jones, right? The GOAT. They don't realize how tough of a fight this is for John Jones and how real of a guy Dominic Reyes is. Young, fast, knockout power in both hands, and hungry. Wants this fight, wants to beat Jones. If John Jones can get out of this fight with a win, I don't even know what's next for him. He's probably going to have to move to heavyweight.
We're talking to Dana White. One more thought about Reyes. He played college football. He is 12-0 as a fighter. But for those who have not seen him before, what kind of a fighter is he?
Yeah, he's a great stand-up fighter, in your face. Like I said, knockout power in both hands, has great kicks. This is a very interesting fight for John Jones.
Dana, what happens? You've seen this before. What happens, though, when you have a guy like that who you know has skills and he's dangerous, but he's never been on that big stage, at least not like this, against a champ, much less arguably the GOAT? What happens in that situation generally?
It's true. We're going to find out. And that's the thing I wish. I wish he had a couple more high-profile fights before this one. But this guy has fast-tracked his way to the shot with Jones. And like you just said, undefeated, has all the skills, all the tools. This is a very, very tough fight for Jones. You know, he's never been under the big lights going in against a guy like this. But Jones hasn't faced an opponent like this in a while either.
Uh-huh. Dana White joining us. As he mentioned about Jones, if he wins, man, a lot of things open up. What about Adesanya? Israel Adesanya, who's absolutely incredible to me. He's making some noise. He wants his shot at Jones. Is that a fight that you could see happening? And if so, would that happen soon?
Adesanya is going into a fight right now that makes no sense. He called out Yoel Romero, who he does not have to fight. You ask anybody, first of all, nobody's asking for Yoel Romero, okay? The exact opposite. And every guy who's fought him will tell you, every time they hit Yoel Romero, it hurt them. I'm telling you, this
right.
is true. This is fact. From, you know, top world champions and top three guys in the world will tell you this about Yoel Romero. Adesanya calls him out and says, I feel like this is one of the baddest dudes in the world, and my legacy will not be complete without fighting this guy first. He could totally wait a couple more months and fight Paulo Costa like he's supposed to. He's taking this fight. So, if he gets through him, then gets through Paulo Costa, then he's got John Jones out there too, which is a very interesting, fun fight that probably shouldn't happen, but I'll probably let it if they want to.
Dana White, my guest. So, at this point, do you trust John Jones? Like, he's going to keep that train on the tracks that far? Like, or do you go into every fight with this guy still holding your breath that something doesn't happen again?
He's been so much better that I don't feel that way like I did 2 years ago. Jones has, you know, been on the straight and narrow, been doing the right things. As far as I know, as much as I could know, he's been doing the right things. And he seems like he's in a really good place mentally, physically, emotionally. And I expect him to be there next Saturday and perform. And I expect an unbelievable fight.
UFC 247, Jones and Reyes, February 8th, Houston, live on ESPN+. Plus. About Houston? What's Houston like as a fight town?
Great fight town. Texas. Yeah. Texas as a state is a great fight state. Every city we go into, Texas has always been really good to us. Fun place to go to fights. Great restaurants in Houston, great hotels, I actually can't wait to get to Houston.
Dick, I'd say, Dan, because you understand my business, our business, when I built this thing from the ground up and we were going door to door ourselves trying to get people to carry the program outside of California, Houston was the first major market that took a chance on this show. So I never forgot that market. That is a great sports town.
Great sports town. Love Houston. Houston is a fun place.
Dan, before you go, Connor posted pics on his Instagram account of you handing him a stack of cash as his performance of the night bonus while at a dinner with Lorenzo. From the pics, it seemed like everybody was having a good old time, Dana. How was that dinner?
Dinner was awesome. We had a blast. And everybody thinks, you're the only one that's asked me about that. Everybody's speculating, oh, they were paying him his bonus in cash. First of all, Lorenzo wasn't even involved in the UFC anymore.
Right.
Number two, I am a huge gambler. Okay, I gamble all the time. I play blackjack, okay? And I had just won $150,000 before dinner. So Connor said,
playing
pull
blackjack.
It out. So I pulled the stack out, and I'm showing it to Connor. We're all cracking up. Lorenzo had said something funny about it. And that was my money. It was 100 grand in that bag. And I had just won that before dinner.
You were walking around with 100 gur on you.
Well, I was walking around with 200 on me. I won 150.
That's incredible. Like, so what kind of hands are you playing?
I play 3-4 nights a week.
Okay.
50,000 a hand.
Multiple hands?
Yeah. Before I flew here, I beat Mandalay Bay for 750,000.
Come on.
Yeah.
How'd that feel?
Right before I flew here. It's awesome. It's the best feeling in the world.
What's more intense? The feeling of winning that amount of money or the feeling of losing that amount of money? Does the good feel better
than the
bad feels?
They're very equal. The feeling of winning is awesome when you lose. But I'm in a different place with losing than I used to when I was younger. Because it's not.
You know why that is, Dana? Because you sold the company for $4 billion.
That's not it. That's not it. No matter how much money you have, nobody wants to lose a lot of money.
No, you're right.
Right?
Fair enough.
So what happens is I don't look at it as I'm playing. This is one battle in the war that I fight, okay? So if I lose tonight, I'm coming back tomorrow, and I'm going to it goes back and forth.
Yeah, but do you need that kind of juice to enjoy it? I mean, you're obviously not sitting down at the $25 table, man.
I've been doing this for 20 years.
Uh-huh.
I love it.
Uh-huh. What about games? You bet games?
Not really. I don't bet a lot of games.
Just blackjack.
I'm going to bet the Wilder Fury fight, and I'm going to bet the Super Bowl this weekend. I'll bet big things like that. Here and there. I don't like doing a lot of sports betting. I know this is what most degenerates will tell you, but I'm just going to say, when I play blackjack, I feel like I have more control over the game than I do if I bet on, you know, the 49ers and the Chiefs this weekend.
I have no
say in what happens.
I get that. So, Wilder Fury, who do you have?
It's a tough one, man, because Fury is such a good boxer, and Deontay Wilder is, without a doubt, the hardest puncher in heavyweight history. So the question is, will Fury outbox him for 12 rounds without getting caught?
Can he? Exactly. Can he go 36 minutes without getting caught, shot?
I think he can.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think he got a little too cocky in the first fight. He was handling him very well and boxing him very well in that first fight. And he got a little cocky, got a little lazy, and got clipped. But that being said, how about how fast he got back up after getting hit with that shot?
I asked him again. He was on the show earlier today. I said, Deontay, how did that guy get up from that shot? How did he wake up from that shot? And he just said there were a lot of prayers in the arena. I'm like, okay, but how did he get up from that shot?
Yeah, has nothing to do with prayers.
Can you explain it to me? Yeah.
How he got up from that shot is that guy is tough. Tough as nails with an unbelievable chin. Because when Deontay Wilder hits people like that, they do not get back up.
Ever.
And I think Deontay Wilder is one of the most exciting, charismatic. When you talk about being real, he's just like these guys like Masvidal and Diaz. Some guy was talking smack to him on the internet. He told the guy to come down to the gym. See that video?
Yeah. Like,
I mean, you don't get any more legit than that. So
really quickly,
I love everything about Deontay Wilder. I just don't know if he can box with Fury.
So when you're signing fighters and you're recruiting fighters, are you recruiting real? Are you looking for real?
I'm looking for guys who can really fight.
Yeah.
Looking for guys that are really good. But if they have that other extra thing, whatever it is, if they have that Conor McGregor thing, Masvidal, Diaz, that's all just, you know, The icing on the cake.
Last thought. Does Connor still have that thing? When you and I talked about him in recent years, you would make the point, hey, look, when a guy got $100 million in the bank, it's going to affect them. It could change them. They might not want to work. Does Connor still have that it, that thing?
He looked unbelievable in this fight.
Yeah.
And for people that are saying Cowboys shot, Cowboys this, Cowboys one of the best and one of the baddest to ever do it, and he showed up to win that night. And Conor McGregor ran through him like a freight train. McGregor looks better than he's ever looked. His head's in the right place. Mentally, physically, and emotionally, he is ready to roll. And I can't wait for his next fight.
What's next for him?
Probably the winner of Khabib and Tony.
Who do you like there? It's an amazing fight right there.
Amazing fight. I don't know. But you got, I mean, you got to give the edge to Khabib. Never lost. Undefeated. Savage. Got to give him the edge.
Bill Romanowski. I always think of Romo because this is when Romo and I, we had done interviews before,
yep.
But we never came together the way we did way back in the day on Radio Row. And then our relationship and friendship has never been the same since then. I'm not coming to the Row if you're not here, Romo. It is great to see you. He is a Jungle and Radio Row legend. He is a four-time Super Bowl champ. He is a two-time Pro Bowler. He is a New York Times best-selling author. He is the founder and the CEO of Nutrition 53, which we will get to momentarily. Romo, what's going on? How are you?
Great to be on.
You too, Romo. It's so good to see you. Now, did you get your workout in yet?
I haven't gotten it in yet, but I will get it in later today.
Romo, it's a quarter to two in the afternoon. What, you slacking? Are you sleeping in now?
Well, hey, I had to be on with you. I got to get ready for you. Let's go.
Okay,
it is game on.
All right, so Romo, lay it off for me. What is your, because you look amazing as always. What is your normal workout regimen right now at this point in your life?
Yeah, my normal workout regimen starts actually after work. You know, it's 2 hours after work, and then I go home, eat, and go to bed.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of my routine.
What's your work day like? Are you working 8 to 5? Are you working different kind of hours?
Yeah, I'm working probably 9 to 6 or 7.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So what's rolling you out of the rack these days? What gets you out of bed in the morning fired up and excited?
You know what? I like to get out of bed. You know, I'm out of bed 5:30, 6 o'clock, and I like to read. And I'm reading nutrition. I'm reading studies. I'm doing stuff to where how do I just keep getting better myself with my company, Nutrition 53? That's what I do. So, you know, I want to stay on top of it. And by doing that, the only way to do that is you got to stay on your game and you got to know what's going on, you know, in the country, in the world, as far as studies go.
So, Romo, at this age... I'm not saying we're the same age, but at a certain age or this age, can we still get better or are we just fighting off decay, fighting off the inevitable, or can we really improve?
You know what? Harvard will tell you you lose, you know, 10 to 20% a year. But I'm going to say this, you know, you get smarter, you get wiser, you don't make the dumb mistakes when you were younger. So there's a part of me that doesn't believe that my game is any less now than it was 10 years ago.
Romo, how much would you pay or what body part would you give up to run out onto the field on Sunday one last time and play in the Super Bowl one more time?
I'd give an arm. Oh, yeah. Just to run down on kickoff. And I would blow somebody up. And if that went out of the end zone, I would still blow somebody up.
Man, what was that? I mean, you cut your teeth doing just that. What was it like covering kicks as a young Bill Romanowski?
Oh, it was incredible. I loved it. And here's the only problem with that, Jimmy, is sometimes I just focused on laying somebody out instead of actually making a tackle with the guy who's got the ball. Same on punt. You know, I would go down there, and if there was somebody I wanted to put down on the turf, that's what I was going to focus on. I'll let one of my buddies make the tackle.
Bill Romanowski joining us. Romo, what was it like? Can you take me through like a Sunday as you got ready and then hit the field to play in the NFL? What was going through your mind? What was coursing through your veins?
I tell you what, the butterflies were incredible, and a lot of people say when you lose the butterflies, it's time to give it up. I tell you what, there's times now when I still get butterflies. You know, I'll be at this game on Sunday, and there's no doubt that for a little bit of time, there's going to be a flashback or something that makes me think that I'm still could go a play or two. And the reality is I can't. But before the big game, the Super Bowl, knowing that there's 250 million people watching, you still had to boil it down and realize you're playing a game and it's an away game against an opposing team. You know, one thing Bill Walsh always told us, you know, getting ready for our first game, which was down here, he said, "Men, you're playing an away game in Miami against the Cincinnati Bengals. If you start focusing on Super Bowl, you lose track of what got you here." And that's playing great football.
Bill Romanowski is my guest. So that said, Romo, what's it mean to you to see the 49ers back in the Super Bowl? What kind of memories does that bring back?
Oh, it's incredible. You know, going to the playoff games, seeing the 49er fans erupt again like back in the day in Candlestick, you know, I'm proud. I'm proud of, you know, the 49ers. Proud of John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan, Jed York on what they put together. Because it takes a team. It's not just Kyle Shanahan. John Lynch had something to do with this. The owner, the fact that he was innovative enough to hire a guy out of broadcasting in John Lynch. Yeah, he was a football player, a great one, you know, but to put him in as general manager, that's a big stretch. But I tell you what, it worked out. And to see what they put together, and they built the team through their defensive line. Because the defensive line sets the tempo pretty much in every game, Jimmy.
No, they're amazing. That defensive front is absolutely amazing. So how do you go about trying to stop Mahomes? Is it just a matter of hitting this guy as hard and as often as you can? What do you do with a quarterback like that?
You know what? Here's what you're going to see. I think you're going to see more nickel and dime situations. I don't think you're going to see two linebackers, you know, lining up very much in a base defense. I think you're going to see one linebacker, maybe no linebackers, and they'll play, you know, this game, forcing them to run the ball to win it, and they'll have the best situation they can have, and that is more DBs, more safeties, and focus on the four-man front getting the pass rush.
So as a defensive player, Romo, when you watch Mahomes, what do you think?
You know what? I think a little bit, and back in my day, I think of Randall Cunningham. I think of Brett Favre. If you could kind of put those two together, that's kind of what you'd have. Because Brett Favre is really good out of the pocket improvising. Randall Cunningham was good out of the pocket running the football. Mahomes can run the football, and he can improvise, and you have to always realize he's looking to make a play. He's really not looking to run the football. So when you're out there playing defense on Sunday, you got to focus on your responsibility. You look back and think he's running, all of a sudden he'll throw the ball deep for a touchdown.
He might not be running. He's just extending the play.
Exactly.
He's just never giving up on a play. All right, so you're representing Nutrition 53
yes.
and Lean One. How is business these days, Romo? And if they're listening and they want more information about the products, where do they go to get it?
They go to Nutrition53.com for a buy one, get one Super Bowl special. But at the end of the day, Jimmy, I get to talk football and I get to help people. You know, they can also go to Smoothie King. We have the Lean One smoothie on the menu board there with cleaner blends, you know, no sugar added to their smoothies. So, you know, I live a blessed life. And, you know, living, eating, and breathing nutrition and still getting enough football. Hey, it's not like it used to be, but I get enough just to kind of satisfy that hunger.
Romo, you're crazy, man, and I mean it in the best way possible. I'll tell you what I so admire about you, Romo. I'm not sure I've ever known a guy who played that game at that level who loved it like you did. I mean, I mean this sincerely. I don't know that I've ever met anybody who had the passion to play in that league that you did, yet for you it didn't end there. You found a way to reinvent.
Yeah.
You had to find a way to get that juice somehow, some way.
Absolutely.
How did you do that?
Well, it's because nutrition had such a big impact in my career. And I was always helping my buddies. It was like, okay, how do I continue to do that? And I still got professional athletes I help. I do that kind of for fun. And then you know, it's the rest of America. I get to make a difference. And when I get the messages of, hey, I lost 50 pounds, and all I did is I drank a lean one every morning. I mean, that's pretty, it's, I mean, I feel blessed that I'm able to, that I was able to work with a lot of doctors and scientists to come up with a formula to really help people. And for that, you know, I used to pinch myself at times when I played football because I was like, I get to play football. They pay me a lot of money. They don't have to pay me to do this. I love it. I get to work out. I get to run around, hit people.
Okay, but dude, what happens now when you get the urge to knock somebody on their ass? What do you do about that?
Well, those days, this body is not ready to do that again.
I think it is.
And, you know, every once in a while, I'll have that dream where I'm late to the stadium and I'm jonesing to get out there because I can't wait to hit someone again, to sack a quarterback. And I know it's going to happen.
How pissed are you when you wake up and you realize it's only a dream?
And for a split second or two, it feels real.
Yeah.
You know? And so I miss it.
Romo, it is now officially the Radio Row. He is a Jungle and Radio Row legend. Once again, a four-time Super Bowl champ, a two-time Pro Bowler. He is a New York Times best-selling author. He is the founder and CEO of Nutrition 53. Romo,
awesome,
did
buddy.
It again, man. So hey, good to see you.
Thank you. Great to see you,
Bill
Jimmy.
Bill Romanowski. Ronnie Stanley is my guest. Ronnie, it's so good to see you. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Dude, those numbers. I haven't even gotten into all the numbers. The numbers were amazing, but I got to get into something with you. It's really important. I had Mark Ingram on the show Wednesday. We talked about that moment during the Pro Bowl week where your sunglasses were broken. There was some controversy as to whether or not Mark broke them or Lamar Jackson broke them. Mark was really clear about how Lamar ran him right under the bus and that he did it. Dude, who broke your glasses? What happened?
You know, we went back to the video to look at the instant replay, and I think it was Lamar. We've come to the consensus that Lamar has been the suspect. He's the main suspect right now.
He's the main suspect, but did the guy do it? Do you
according to video evidence, it's almost indisputable. If we challenge the play, they have to overturn this one. You know, that it's almost indisputable evidence.
You know, the guy's like one of the great leaders that when something good happens, he will not take credit. If something bad happens, it's on me. But he's not doing that with the glasses, man. Why?
No, he doesn't want to claim the glasses. I don't know why. I have no idea, but I still love him, though.
All right, now I get it. Ronnie Stanley joining us. Now, earlier in the season, you and I talked about the fact that you were starting to get more and more attention as a Pro Bowl player, but also as an All-Pro. What did it mean to you to be named first-team All-Pro and have a spot in the Pro Bowl?
It was a very humbling feeling to know that I was voted, you know, by my coaches and peers to be in the Pro Bowl as a starter. And then a couple weeks later to get that All-Pro nod, It was just kind of surreal to I know that a lot of people never thought, you know, I'd even make the Pro Bowl, let alone be first team All Pro. So to prove all the people that have been supporting me my whole life, to prove them right was big for me.
What'd that feel like?
It just felt like a lot of emotions at once. I was very thankful. I was very, very humbled, and I was excited too, because I don't want it to be like a one time thing. You know, I want to make sure I'm consistent.
So how did you approach it when you got there? Were there guys that you were looking to kind of connect with, pick their brains, guys from other teams? How did you approach it?
Oh, when I was at the Pro Bowl, yeah, I wanted to meet as many guys as possible because, you know, these are the best of best, and I respect all their game, and especially the offensive linemen like Tyron Smith, Terron Armstead, you know, those guys, even the guards. You know, I wanted to just talk to them, see how they approach the game, how they approach game weeks, and just, you know, pick their brains.
Ronnie Stanley, my guest. And then you got the guys you play with, Ingram. Man, my man's got energy. He's got amazing energy. What's it mean to the offense, actually the entire team, to have a guy like that around, a guy to keep you fired up, make sure everybody's positive? I mean, is that always good, or sometimes you have to say, my man, we get it. Just dial it back a little bit. We're all good.
No, I think that's always good, especially, you know, in the NFL, these seasons, you know, they're long, they're grueling, these are physical games, and you need that energy. You need that positive vibe throughout the whole year, and Mark undoubtedly brings that vibe. It's not fake. It's not you know, he doesn't create a false energy. This is just him, the way he acts, and we all feel it. We all run with it. We all vibe with him. So he's a great teammate, great brother, great friend.
You know, I'm going to say this, like, because I asked the question does not mean I'm skeptical. I sat with him on the set, and I felt it. Now, I'm just a media guy. I think he's just natural like that. I think he makes everybody feel that way. So I can imagine how you guys are. But from the outside, it's not just him, right? It seems like there's a real brotherhood on the offense. Like, there's a bond, a love that you guys have. Where does the bond come from? How did you guys get that tight? How does this group mesh the way it does?
Yeah, like you said, it's a brotherhood. And I think we all came together through our hard work. And especially through the summer, through training camp, through off-season workouts. We don't really have guys out there just going through the motions. And through those guys, we see each other sacrificing every day, trying to get better, trying to push ourselves, trying to push our body. And through that, you form a bond. It's a bond of trust, you know. That's what we say, big trust. And you got to have trust in your teammates that they're going to do their job. And we have trust in each other just because we see the way we work. We know that they're going to get the job done.
Ronnie Stanley, my guest. And then Lamar hooked up the offensive line with Rollies. Got you guys Rolexes. I'm kind of a watch head. You know, I mean, that's personal, but, like, what did you make of the gift? How often do you break yours out? What did that mean to you?
I still haven't worn mine yet. It's kind of in a watch case, just sitting there. I just kind of look at it, and I'm just like, dang, you got us a Rolex. You know, that's something I'll keep in, you know, my family forever and just, you know, let them know. I just passed down from generation to generation type thing. So I've never had a Rolex. So for Lamar to do that and to get all the offensive line of Rolex shows his appreciation and just how much he cares about us.
Dude, as a watch head, that is really cool. That's how you see that watch. Like, you haven't even put it on yet,
yeah.
But you know where it's from, who gave it to you, and you plan on passing it down through your family.
Yeah, definitely.
It's very cool. Ronnie Stanley, my guest. He had this great line recently where he said, quote, "I'm not afraid to give Lamar bleep off the field, like joking around, but I ain't letting no Joe Schmo run up on him, though, that's for sure," end quote. Fact is, not only are you not letting a Joe Schmo run up on him, you're the pass blocker of the year. Some of these numbers are amazing. You played 16 games and allowed 6 quarterback pressures all year. What does that honor mean to you, and how much pride is there in the fact that you've dominated, literally dominated everybody in front of you all year long?
Well, for me, it was a team effort, you know, just our offense running the way it was and executing the way it was, 11 people on the field doing their job. I wouldn't be able to have the season I had without them. And then, you know, Lamar, he's an X factor. He brings a lot of attention to himself. But, it just took a lot of focus, and it was mainly starting the off season, just putting in the work. I really took, like, maybe a week off, and I was right back in working, and that's just all it took, a lot of focus. So you just got to week in, week out, because you can have a couple good weeks, but, you know, you got to refocus every week, because next week you're going against some other stud.
And this, I want to put to you another way. You won nearly 99% of the pass protections, and PFF also rated your performance this season as not only the best this year, but one of the best of all time, and you're right alongside guys like Jonathan Ogden and Joe Thomas. How does it feel to hear your names mentioned alongside two all-time greats like those guys?
I mean, it's very humbling, and like I said before, I don't want it to be like a one-time thing. I want to use these experiments and these experiences and all these things that, you know, these percentages. I want to build on it and just only get better and use it as motivation. I don't want to just, you know, be okay with where I'm at.
Listen, there's no way you come on the program and we don't talk about Lola and Rico, your adopted pit bulls. How are they doing these days?
They're doing great. They're pretty spoiled.
How so?
You know, they really don't. They really have the life. I pretty much moved to a 7-acre house for them, so they could run around and not have to worry about neighbors.
That's the best.
Yeah. So I love them. I love them to death. You know, I treat them like my kids. I don't have kids, but that's how I treat them.
Did you really get that property mostly with the dogs in mind?
I swear, I bought this house for my dogs.
How old are they now?
Lola's about 8 or 9. Rico is 4. Yeah, so Lola, we didn't know her age when we adopted her, so we try to call her like 8 or 7, but she's probably like 9 or 10. But
so how did the two of them get along?
Oh, they're great. They're great. I brought Rico home when he was like 5 weeks old, and he was super energetic, and I was a little worried, but Lola took to him like a mom would, you know, to her child. So it worked out really well.
Next time you come on, I will ask you about those two again. Last thought. I know you're not going to rest on what you've done so far. So what about this offseason? How do you approach it? And what's the next step in your growth look like?
I think, you know, to attack this offseason using what happened, you know, towards the end of the season as motivation, we obviously didn't end the season the way we wanted to. And, you know, what are we going to do with that? Are we just going to, you know, sit there, let that sulk, or try to build on it? So I know the guys we have mature guys that are going to go out there and work. And that's what I plan to do this offseason, just try to build and be a better leader for my team.
And a first-team All-Pro, a Pro Bowler, and an All-American from Notre Dame. Ronnie, always good to talk Ravens football on this show. Great to get caught up. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Look at look. The man. The man.
Welcome back. CBS Sports. Show. That is crazy, man. Look at these guys. I got the perfect cast. Only Devin Bush understands what's going on here. That is tremendous. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you know what I'm talking about. We bump back, and there's a fan. There's the one guy in this town who's got a picture of me who for some reason wanted the autograph, which is worth nothing. Nothing, but he's got it. We're joined by a linebacker for the Steelers. He was named to the Pro Football Writers of America All-Rookie Team. He led the team with 109 tackles, a new team record for rookies. He was second in the NFL with 4 fumble recoveries. He also added 4 passes defensed, 2 INTs. He had a forced fumble. He was an All-American and a Big Ten Linebacker of the Year at Michigan. He was the 10th pick overall in last year's draft. Devin Bush is my guest. What's up, man? How are you?
How you doing? That guy sounds like a beast.
Dude.
Look at that.
That guy does sound like a beast,
man. Like a beast.
Man, you played like one, too. Yeah. How you feeling? How you living?
I'm feeling great, man. I'm living life. I can't complain about anything right now.
You had a great idea. You said to me when you sat down, well, actually, why don't you tell them what you said to me when you sat down?
Oh, I said, this is where you watch the Super Bowl at?
I said, you know what? I should give that some thought. And you said, you should. You got
you
two
should.
TVs
two
here.
TVs,
no one's bothering you.
A desk. It's everything you need.
Can you kick me down those sunglasses?
Hey,
I can rock the glasses.
You can rock the glasses.
Pull it off, man.
You definitely can.
Pull it off?
You definitely can.
All right, thank you, man. Good looking out. All right, so you and I have talked in the past. You're from Pembroke Pines, which is about 25 miles from here. What's it like then for you to come back home to South Florida now as an NFL star? Does it feel different?
Man, yes, it feels different. Man, just my favorite thing to do is ride by, like, my old Pop Warner Park, you know, go through those places where I used to walk the streets, you know, friends' houses. It's just like, wow, like everything that I did there just led me here. And I just so appreciative to be able to be blessed enough and understand that, you know, I was always trying to get to somewhere bigger, you know.
So what was it like growing up in that area?
Man, it's a lot. Man, just because, not saying it's the worst place in the world, nor is it the best place in the world, but, you know, you get what you get and, you know, make do with what you got.
You know, it's interesting because over the last few days, I've had one NFL player after another who grew up playing high school ball in South Florida on this show. And for those who do not know, what is it like to play high school ball in Florida? What is it about the area that makes it so good and has produced so many amazing players?
Yeah, man, I tell people, man, it's a hotbed. It's just top notch, man. It's like mini NFL, you know. So I mean, you playing guys every Friday that are top of their class, 5-star this, projected to be this, you know. Then you move on, boom, go to college. You guys are on the same level as you, and you play against them again. You play against them again. You see them playing. Then they get in the pros, play them again. You see them again. And so, like, when I see Nick Bosa play, I'm not like, oh my god. I'm like, I've seen him do that like 100 million times. So he's just doing it all
over
again.
It's like normal, right?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's just what he does, you know.
Devin Bush joining us. So you wrapped up a season where you set a team record for rookies with 109 tackles. Now, when you're playing defense in Pittsburgh and you set a team record, that means you did something really significant. Mm-hmm. How does it feel to know that you did something that nobody else who's ever worn that jersey had ever done before?
It feels great. I mean, man, I got my name on something. Accomplishment. Take the small wins. You know, they stack up. They mean something, and I'm just grateful.
Listen, I know you know this because you live there and you work there, but that's a different sort of town. That's a different sort of organization when it comes to football. Because of the tradition there, when you're drafted, especially as a linebacker, right, there's going to be pressure and there's going to be more scrutiny. I guess you could see that a couple of different ways, man. You can let that beat you down and you can kind of give into it, or you can see the pressure is a privilege.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you see it?
And I see pressure as a privilege. It gives you a chip, you know. It gives you something to work towards, and it gives you an extra edge. You know, it's like, they think I can't do this. All right, cool. I'm gonna go do this. Just little extra little film story, just extra little workout that's gonna put me on that level, so I can say I said so. Or I told you so. You know, so it's like a motivation factor.
And dude, there's so many amazing linebackers who've come through Pittsburgh over the years. Like, I'm way older than you, but I can remember as a kid watching guys like Jack Lambert and Andy Russell, guys like that. Even as I got into this business, I can remember interviewing Kevin Green and Greg Lloyd. I mean, like, amazing players. Yeah. Do these guys come back to the facility? Do you spend any time with them?
Yeah, they have. Like, they'll come around and they'll be in the locker room or they'll be around the area. And they'll shake your hand like, hey, I just played here back in this time. And, yeah, we won a Super Bowl. I remember this, remember that. And it's just cool to be able to have that, like, that brotherhood. You know, it's not like, oh, yeah, we better. It's like, hey, like, you guys are supposed to top us. Y'all supposed to take it to the next level.
It's family.
Yeah, basically it's just all family.
Devin Bush joining us. Speaking of family, I had Cam Hayward on the show on Wednesday. Man, every time I talk to Cam.
Scared.
No, I'm not.
Really?
I mean, I should be. I would be if I thought that he was mad at me. No, dude, I'm so impressed with the guy. So impressed with the guy. What's he like as a teammate?
He's great, man. You
scared?
He'll scare you sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah, right. He'll scare you. But he's just a big bully. He wanna show everybody how big he is. And look at him.
Dude, he is big, man.
So, I mean, his head's humongous, his arms, his legs, his body. I mean, but nah, Cam, man, he's a super veteran. And he loves the game of football so much. And you could just tell he puts his all into it week in and week out. There's been times this guy had a thigh bruise in the middle of a game. After every possession, he has a heat pack on it. You know, thigh bruises are not easy to get over. You know, he got over it. Next week, he's playing. You know, thigh bruises put people out about 2 weeks. He was in the fire the whole time.
Yeah, it's not like somebody's going to put a hat on it every single time they can, right?
Exactly. So, hey, Cam, man, all respect to Cam. My big brother, love him to death. Great teammate.
So you guys are part of a defense that's loaded at every single level, putting up historic numbers in sacks, QB hits, takeaways. Now, what is it about that group that makes it so special, and how much fun is it to run with that group?
Yeah, it's a bunch of playmakers. I think this is, for me, in my career, it's probably the most playmakers I've played with. You know, just for everybody that you play around, you have that playmaking ability. You know, you got T.J. Watt, you got Cam, you got Bud, you got Joe Hayden, Steve Nelson, Minka, me, Mark Barron. Like, I keep going, and Mike Hilton. Like, it's a bunch of guys. Terrell Edmonds is bunch of guys with a bunch of playmaking ability that's just waiting to just do something. So I think we feed off each other.
God, there was all that talk about that deal for Minka, and then Minka came in and just started making plays.
Yeah.
Literally from the time he hit the facility, right? Like, what did he bring to the defense? How different was it with him there?
Man, he's just a guy. He's so reliable. You know, he's a guy. He's always in the right position, always around the ball, making the best decisions, and he played. He just has a great feel for the game. It just shows, like, the game's not hard to him. That's all.
You know, you mentioned TJ, and we got Cam. We're talking about some Big Ten rivalries, right?
Yeah.
But then Ohio State's something different. You're a Michigan man.
Yeah.
Things have not gone well for Michigan in that rivalry over the years. You know this. How tired are you of being asked about Ohio State? And then what's it going to take for Michigan to turn that thing around?
Man, I wish I could get some money every time I get that question. I wouldn't need football right now. Yeah, I wouldn't need football. I wouldn't be here right now. I'd be somewhere filthy rich on my private island. But they just gotta it gotta be a mentality thing, man. I keep saying this, man. We have the talent. You know, we have the talent. We have the coaching. We got everything we need. We top notch program. We just gotta mentally gotta be able to just step into that game and say enough is enough.
But do you think they sometimes hit the field expecting bad things to happen instead of good things?
Man, I think sometimes they hit the field. I'm gonna include myself. We hit the field like, man, I hope things work out, you know, instead of like, hey, I'm about to go execute. I don't care who it is, what the situation is, what we plan for. I'm about to go out here and do what I got to do.
Hmm. Devin Bush, my guest, before I let you go, you're your own guy. That's pretty clear. Ryan Shazier, though, texted you after you were drafted to say congrats and let you know that he's there for you. Again, you are your own man. You're your own player. But what did it mean to have Shazier reach out? And what's it mean to have him around during camp?
Yeah, man, for him, a guy like Shazier, man, just to reach out, man, that's a guy, you know, from hometown, man, South Florida, with the Plantation, Big Ten, played Ohio State, got drafted still, like, Pro Bowl this, Ryan Shazier this, and play the same position, we're both fast. So it's like, I see a lot of me and him, and I see a lot of him and me, and it's like, damn, like, I got that in my corner, you know? So it's like, wow, like, I don't need anything else. Like, I'm super blessed.
Dude, you know what else you had in your corner I want to ask you about? We talked about your background. Your father, Devin Sr., all right? He's talked about how hard he was on you, how tough he was on you, how hard he pushed you to be better. You've said that you got so much out of it that if you could go back, you'd actually have him push you even harder because of how good it made you. How big of a role did he play in helping you become the player you are and as tough as you are?
Yeah. He had his hands with me since I was a kid, and of course, but when I say hands, like he was on me 3 years old, you know, like, you're not doing it good enough. You're not doing this good enough. You got to do this again. Like, one time he tricked me and told me I didn't make the Pop Warner team just to see what I was going to do. You know, like, I want to play football.
How old were you?
Man, I was probably like 6-7 years old. Okay. You know, he told me, oh, you weren't good enough. You didn't make the team. Like, how am I supposed to take that? You know, but
is that why he said it? He wanted to see how you would take it,
He
right?
just wanted to
see your reaction.
Yeah. And, there's stuff like that. This is small stuff he did with me, man. It just made me who I am and mentally strong and mentally tough. And man, I feel like I'm just made of steel, you know, messing with him. And that's why I guess I am who I am, you know.
See, you know how that goes, though, right? That could go the other way. It might go badly.
Yeah.
He gets pretty emotional when he talks about your journey and mm-hmm. where you are right now. So how did that go? How would you describe your relationship with your dad who pushed you that hard?
Yeah, man, I was with my dad Monday through Sunday, every day of the week for...
Full-time, man.
Man, 17 years. And, man, football is the reason... Big, big reason we like this, you know, and him being my father is another reason why I like this. Him being my coach, my trainer, you know, my mentor. Like, so, man, that guy knows me in and out, and I know him in and out. And our journey was together, you know. I went to college, and, you know, he came there with me, you know. So it's like, there's nothing else we say, man. That's just how our relationship is.
That's awesome.
We're just super close.
It's so cool. Like, so finally, from a football standpoint, did you ever get beyond him, or is he always your first go-to? Like, are you always blowing him up after the game still?
Nah, the funny thing is, he blows me up. Huh. He's the one, like, I got texts on my phone, like, screenshots of a play, like, you need to keep your leverage on this play. Like, okay.
Is he usually right?
He's most of the time he's right. Yeah, yep. That's the bad part. Like, he's...
Exactly. Right?
He's always right.
You know? Want to correct him, like, hey, yo, pops.
He's like, sometimes he's right. You're like, yo, like,
don't you hate that?
It's like, leave me alone. But then again, you know why he's doing it. But then he know how to push my buttons. He know how to make me mad and frustrate me.
He's probably like, if you stop doing that, I'll stop hitting you up.
Exactly.
How many times we covered that?
So nah, he's my biggest critic, but he's also my biggest fan.
Dude, you've been so great here. Finally, what about Mike Tomlin? What's he been like to play for you?
Great. Great, great. Down to earth, player's coach. He understands you. Going to put you in the best position to be the best player you be, whether, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. You know, if you're fast, if you run down on punts, you're going to run down on punts. You're going to be the best player doing it.
You know, dude, when he got on Twitter, his first tweet was something like, hey, man, nothing but straight fire. You're going to get nothing but straight fire from me. I'm like, man, I love that so much. So I had some racehorses. We named one Straight Fire after that. Yeah, man. And then Coach, no offense, he hadn't given us any Straight Fire on Twitter, but I would imagine behind the scenes when he's coaching, you probably get some of that, right?
All fire. Before the game, week before the game, doesn't matter. He come in the room, see it in his eyes. Hey, guys, I ain't blinking, so you shouldn't either. So it's like, hey, all right, cool. We following your lead, Coach. Man, be right behind you.
I love it. Named to the Pro Football Writers of America All-Rookie Team. And as I mentioned, he did something that no other rookie had ever done for the Steelers. 109 tackles. That is a team record. Devin Bush. Dude, I knew when you sat down, and I was laughing before I could finish hello, that we were going to have a good interview, man.
Yeah,
that was great. Really
sure.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah, you too.
Appreciate
always,
you.
Always
great,
a pleasure.
Man. Take care. Rashawn Evans is my guest. Rashawn, what's up? How are you?
Man, I'm good, man. How are you?
That's pretty good resume. How'd that sound to you?
Man, it sounds pretty good to me. I feel like I got a little bit more to put on that resume, though. I'm not done.
You got time. You got
a lot of time.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Good. So you're coming off a huge year. Maybe the year didn't end exactly the way you would have liked. However, man, it was a big year. Big year for you. Big year for the team. As you look back on the season, what kind of thoughts do you have?
You know, I feel I have positive thoughts. I don't have any regrets. I don't have any bad thoughts. I feel like the future is very bright for us as the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, just to be able to have that opportunity, be in the AFC Championship, put yourself in a position from being at 2-4 at the beginning of the season, being able to come back and put yourself in that position to be able to be a game away from the Super Bowl. I feel like that's amazing, man. And, you know, the guys that I had in that room, I feel like I've learned a lot from those guys. It's a little tough knowing that the guys that you had that chemistry with, it's not going to be the same next year. But You know, that's the reason why we play this game, man. You develop those relationships, and then you move on, you keep playing football.
Rashawn Evans joining us. It is a business. You know that not everybody will be there. You understand this. The playoff run itself, though, I mean, to start where you started and to end where you ended, how much does that motivate you going into the offseason to maybe even double down and hit the thing even harder?
I feel like it motivates me a lot. Knowing that you were that close, knowing that, you know, everything was on the line, but you still came up short. You win and lose some, man. And this game is unpredictable. Injuries are 100% guaranteed. And all of those combined, you know, you just kind of go back from that season thinking that, like, wow, like, you know, from a 2-4 start, we put ourselves back in that position. I feel like it's a win for me. And, you know, to be able to have another opportunity to go into another season with, you know, a whole new agenda, a whole new challenge, that's what makes it exciting.
Rashawn Evans is joining us. Now, you faced Kansas City twice this year. In the first game, back in November, you had that 53-yard fumble return for a TD. It was your first NFL touchdown. Mm-hmm. What do you remember about that play, and what was going through your head as you were sprinting away from everybody?
I don't even think I remembered anything. I don't even think I saw anything. I just remember my teammates coming to me, and I did, like, a shot celebration, and that was just – off the jump. So, I mean, that moment right there, man, I had...
That wasn't locked and loaded?
That was not locked and loaded. That was all just off of just pure just creativity. But, you know, just plays like that, I want to continue to keep making throughout my career. But, you know, I got to give kudos to another guy that played next to me, David Long, who drawed the ball out, was able to get the ball on the ground, and me being able to pick it up and scoop and score. You know, it felt really good, man. Hopefully I can continue to do that.
I bet that felt great.
Yeah.
Now, I had Derrick Henry on the show earlier in the week and pointed out that your win over Kansas City in November was the last time they lost a game. Mm. You faced them again in the postseason. You know them pretty well. What kind of advice would you give the 49ers defense when it comes to stopping the Chiefs offense?
I would say, really, you got to be really good tacklers, and also to I would say don't try to just be overly physical with them, man. They got a lot of skill, really good skill guys, and they get paid a lot of money to make moves in the open field. So you got to really not be so aggressive. I know it's very hard to do that because this is a physical game, but, you know, you got to be really good tacklers, got to be, you know, locked in. Don't give them any opportunities to, you know, capitalize off your mistakes, because, you know, you got a guy back there with a once-in-a-generational type arm, and he can make every throw you can think of. So I would just tell those guys to do that, but at the same time, at the bare minimum, stay to your plan, what got you there in the first place.
That's great advice. And man, they're fast.
They're very fast, man.
And in space, they're a problem.
Yeah.
So as a linebacker and a fellow Bama guy, what do you think when you watch Derrick Henry just steamrolling opposing linebackers? How much does that fire you up?
Man, it fires me up a lot. To see a running back with a defensive-type mindset, that's football right there, man. I don't think you're going to see another guy that big and that fast do the things that he's done, and to be healthy, be durable, and consistently do it every week. I mean, it's going to be hard for me to sit here and say that you're going to see that again. I'm a type of guy too. I watch guys that are coming up in the draft. I watch guys that, you know, in college. But it's I'm telling you, man, he's an exceptional player, and I feel like it's a blessing now and an amazing thing that he's finally getting the credit that I feel like he deserves.
Rashawn Evans is my guest. I mean, how often do you see an offensive player that gives as good as he gets? Mm-hmm. How often do you see an offensive player that a defensive player at some point in the game just doesn't want any part? Like, I don't want to tackle that guy anymore, right?
Yeah.
Can you see that during a game development?
Oh, absolutely. They won't tell you that because we're football players.
Exactly. Right?
We're men. We're not going to, you know, allow another man to know that you've defeated me. But at the same time, the one thing about human beings, you know about mannerism. You know what defeat looks like when a guy's, you know, got his head down, he's huffing and puffing, he's tired, he's talking to his teammate on man, did you have that gap? You were supposed to have that gap. You missed the time. You know, so I mean, all of those things, and when you're seeing that out there on the field, you know, it's impressive to see because he does it every week.
Right, so that playoff running through that goal line stand against New England late in the first half, they had the ball on the 1 yard line. On first down, you tackled Sony Michel for a loss. Mm. On second down, you brought down Rex Burkhead. Mm. On third down, you came flying in, you tackled Michel again, and you forced the field goal. What do you remember about the entire sequence?
I just remember just really getting back in the backfield as much as I could. But, you know, at the same time, it takes 11 people to get something done like that. You got to have great guys that are being able to set the edge. Got to have good D linemen that are able to penetrate and create disruption in the backfield, making running back stop the feet. And also you got to have really good DBs that are able to fit off of you and be able to fit gaps and be really good tacklers down there in the box. So it takes 11 guys for something like that to happen. Like I said earlier, I feel like they really just threw me an alley-oop and I just went down on the court and just slammed it.
You know, I'll bet you, though, if I were to say to you, I mean, it takes 11 guys, but, I mean, it takes an entire organization, right?
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
You guys go into that game not just believing that you could beat them in their place. It seemed like you guys went in there and it never dawned on anybody that you wouldn't win that game.
Yeah.
And that it runs all the way through the organization, right? The front office to the coaches, the players to the janitors, everybody. How do you explain the culture and the attitude that seemingly every person in the organization has?
Man, I just feel like,
And where does it start?
Man, it starts from the GM. It starts from the owner, from the GM down to the head coach, down to the players, down to the coaches, down to the players. And I feel like each person in that locker room, in that organization, that facility, we feel like we can beat anybody. There's no longer Tennessee Titans that are just happy to be able to, you know, have a winning record or just happy to be in the playoffs and get to the AFC Championship. Like, the conversation is different now. We want to win the whole thing, and we feel like we can. And I'm not scared to say that at all. I've never been a player to be able to say that and be able to speak up about the fact that I feel like we have another opportunity, too, next year to be able to be in the same position, just based off of what we do. So, I mean, I'm really excited about the future.
Well, you've won the whole thing before.
Yeah.
Back to college.
Yeah.
You're this great. I'm laughing because you retweeted a clip of Nick Saban at practice recently, and it's him calling somebody out, and it started with I. Damian Harris said, as soon as you hear Coach Saban hit that I, it's over for somebody. What did you learn from Saban when you played for him, and what was your reaction when he would start with I? You knew something bad was happening, right?
Man, that's funny you said that because Damian Harris, that's my dude right there, man.
Yeah.
We actually joke about Coach Saban because he does stuff like that. But,
right.
Man, the thing I feel like I got from him, man, is always being where your feet are. Don't worry about anything that's outside of what you're supposed to be doing. Don't worry about nobody else's job. Worry about the task at hand. Worry about what's going on right now. And I feel like that changed my career. I feel like, you know, now I can use that with any situation.
God,
I
don't dude, it's just so
football.
Simple, right? It's so simple.
It's so simple. It really
worry
is.
Worry about
and
where your feet are.
Worry about be where your feet are.
Be
really
where your
worry
feet
about.
Are.
Really worry about the things that you can control. So, and then too, just with the it was one time where my freshman year, I remember I kept messing up, man, on a coverage, and he was constantly getting on to me. And you know, I was kind of like, man, you know, this is probably the greatest feeling ever to know that I'm at University of Alabama getting cussed out by Coach Saban. It was a great feeling.
Yeah.
Now, I will say this. I'm not going to lie. After a while, I got kind of agitated. Like, man, I'm over here in this 110 index.
I got it.
But, hey, man, it's a blessing, man, to be able to be coached by him. One of the greatest coaches in college football.
Two of your football role models, DeMarcus Ware and Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah.
You're from Auburn, Alabama, just like DeMarcus. Marcus, what did you like about his game and how he handled himself on and off the field?
I feel like he was a true pro. He was a pro on the field and off the field. That's the reason why I feel like he was really a role model to me. Guy that came out of Auburn High School. The fact that he gave that game so many different memories, man, with his pass rush, his unique ability to pass rush, and just disrupt the backfield. I always try to implement stuff, some of the stuff he does, into my game as well, just with pass rushing, because I still feel like I'm a little pass rusher, man, but even though I play inside linebacker. But, you know, and also, too, just being able to, you know, watch his game over and over and over again to see that, you know, some of those same moves are being used still to this day by other athletes, too. So, I mean, it just lets you know what type of athlete he was.
Yeah, to the point you just made, though, I mean, this is really only your third season playing inside.
Yeah.
You were a defensive end in high school.
Yeah.
You spent 2 years on the outside at Bama before you moved inside. I mean, I guess I could make the argument that you're still learning that position.
I am.
But I wouldn't make the argument putting up the numbers that you are, not if you're leading that team in tackles, but are you still learning the position?
I actually am. Yeah, no, that's funny.
On the NFL level.
That's funny you brought that up because nobody talks about that. I actually am still learning the inside linebacker position.
No,
I was a pass rusher in college, and majority of my high school career, I was a quarterback. So defense in itself is still kind of new to me anyway. So, I mean, I'm just having fun with this game, man. You know, I don't really be worrying too much about, you know, getting accolades and all this other stuff. That's going to happen when it happens. But, you know, I truly just like running through somebody's face, man. I feel like that's the biggest rush I get from playing football, to be honest with you.
What a great line. I truly like running through somebody's face.
Yeah.
You know, one last thought. There's so much character in that locker room. I've talked to a lot of your teammates. And they're great guys to talk to. I would imagine if they're great guys to talk to, man, they're great guys to go to battle with.
No doubt.
One of my favorite guys ever, honestly, is Wesley Woodyard.
Oh, absolutely.
Man, I love this dude. I love this dude. How important is he to what that team does, and how much have you learned from him?
Oh, he's very important. I feel like he's that gel, man, that keeps us all together, man, and kind of understanding that, you know, when things are going bad and you feel like you're at the bottom of the ocean, you know, it's okay. You know, you can swim up. You can still be able to, you know, get yourself in a position to be able to change things. And, you know, he's a guy that has so much knowledge, man, about the game in itself. He's done, 15 years in the league. Wasn't a first rounder, wasn't a second rounder, whatever number that he got drafted, but still able to play at a high level like he's doing now. And also, not only that, be a great leader and be able to teach guys like me the game. It's something that is priceless, and, you know, I don't take for granted at all. I'm trying to be a sponge and soak up as much information as I can from a guy like that.
So what's the rest of your offseason look like?
Man, be honest with you, right now it's to enjoy my, you know, the fruits of my labor. But at the same time, man, you know, I feel like now is the prime opportunity for me to, you know, go to that next level. You know, I feel like from my first to second year, I took my biggest stride in my career. You know, obviously still learning the position, but at the same time knowing, you know, some of the basic things you need to know about being an inside linebacker in the league. And, you know, I'm excited, man, the fact that I get another opportunity this year coming up. I feel like it's going to be my best year I've ever had. And, man, I'm just really excited to be coached by, you know, Coach Vrabel, him strapping on that pad and us going one-on-one with each other.
Dude, what's that like when he does that?
It's something you can't explain, man. You don't expect coaches to do that.
Right.
He doesn't have to do that. He literally could just sit there and, you know.
Does he hold his own?
Absolutely. He's very solid. I mean, he's a big guy. So, I mean, you got to give respect to a guy that's wanting to give you every aspect of coaching that he possibly can. He can teach it to you in the film room. He can teach it to you out there on
he's
the field.
Done it.
And he can do it in the drill. I mean, well, there are not a lot of coaches that can do that. So,
no, dude.
Especially
I'm a
head coach.
Middle-aged dude with no game whatsoever. I'm getting all fired up here.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know?
Good night,